It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the Multiplexes and at the Art House.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, and doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog which you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The voice you just heard is a man not willing to pay $25 for he and his wife to see a great movie at AMC Theaters. That's Kobe Slagle.
That's not true.
Would you pay $12.50? You'd pay $12.50.
I would pay $25 to see a great movie.
Not this particular movie.
Well, is it possible that you saw two guys and not necessarily these two particular guys?
Not Utes,
Mr. Gambini. I would pay $25 to see a great movie in a great theater, but I would not pay $25 to see this particular movie.
And what are we talking about? Well, you'll just have to wait a little bit before we get to it. See, this is what we're baiting the listener to stick around and find out what shenanigans we are talking about. And, of course, if you're a longtime listener of the show, you know anytime I can incorporate food and cinema, that's always a good thing. In the second half of today's show... Yes, I got to chat with a Food Network personality. Now she's a published cookbook author. And as we've heard the editing the interview, she's just a fun lady. That's Artie Sequeira. Or Artie Party. Or Artie Party.
Yes, Artie Party. Is this just her first cookbook?
This is her first. Oh. Yeah. She's had a food blog for a while.
I feel like she's been around a while, but I'm kind of surprised this is her first book.
Yeah, she is. She was winner six, season six of Next Food Network Star.
What series are they on?
I don't know. The one with Lenny winning, Cowboy Lenny. Anyway, we'll get to that. So we'll talk with Artie about the cookbook, and of course we'll talk about food and cinema, and her being a fairly new mom about going to the movies with the baby. Everybody makes fun of me for some people, Jim Mueller, make fun of me for having so many Food Network people on and Cooking Channel people on the show. But I think food and film go great together. And yes, we are trying to get in touch with our buddy, longtime contributor to Film Sociology, Robert Irvine.
Regular contributor.
He's busy, but he's going to be he's got a couple of shows coming up in Louisville and Evansville. So we're going to try to get him on very soon. But anyway, we'll get to my chat with
shows like performances.
His live shows. Not Restaurant Impossible. No, he'll be doing his live show where anything can happen.
Anything will happen.
So anyway, we'll get to my chat with Artie in a little bit. But I want to start things off with the new film from Denzel Washington, The Equalizer, which is supposed to be inspired by the 1980s TV show. You don't need to know the TV show to follow this film. It's okay. And it's funny because when I was on the show last week, by the way, Mike Perry and I said, Mr. Slagle, your presence definitely missed. You could tell from listening to the show, it was not done by Mr. Slagle. It was a DIY show with yours truly. Everything was just out of place, out of whack.
Weird show. Last week.
Different mix. An alternative track. That was last week's show. But we got so wrapped up in talking about Kevin Smith's film Tusk that I didn't get a chance to mention that I saw Liam Neeson's new film, A Walk Among the Tombstones. And I'm going to incorporate that a little bit at the end of my review of The Equalizer. So Denzel plays the title role. And
he plays the Equalizer?
He does play the Equalizer. He's going to right wrongs and and other song cliches. Yeah, he's going to fight evil, and he's going to do things right in a pretty violent way. It also reunites him. It also reunites him with director Anton Foo, who directed him, of course, in Training Day, where he got his big Best Actor Oscar. And anyway, and of course, it's an action film. Guess what we're doing? Yeah, we're going to talk over the trailer because there will be catchphrases and tense music. Here we go.
Ominous.
You catch that fish yet?
Hmm? Not Dakota Fanning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did.
It's a happy ending.
Not exactly. The old man met his greatest adversary just when he thought
backstory.
That part of his life was over.
Why didn't he
Denzel's the old man in the sea, apparently.
Old man's got to be the old man. Fish has got to be the fish. Got to be who you are in this world, right?
The
no
equalizer.
Matter what.
Yo, Pop, bet you didn't have to push no dollies at your old job, did you?
Guilty as charged.
Can you do a refund for me when you're done?
Open the register up right now. Move.
Problem need solving.
It was my mother.
Equalizing.
Okay,
things are about to get equalized.
What's you knowing about?
It is about a guy who's a knight in shining armor, except he lives in a world where
Denzel
knights
is Don Quixote.
My ring.
Anything
Pittsburgh?
You want to be.
Boston.
I promised I would never go back to being that person.
Chad Kroger from Nickelback?
Something unspeakable.
Look like
someone you hardly knew. You do something about it. Because you can. I mean about a girl.
Russian mob.
Plot things. Things are getting more difficult.
Ballad with action scenes.
Ashamed of who he is, questioning himself. Plot point.
He didn't take out five pimps. He took out the East Coast
flight reunion.
Of the Russian mafia.
A man with his skill. I want to know who he really is. He
won't Kevin Spacey looking bad guy.
Yeah. Not Kevin Spacey. Where'd all this money come from?
Had enough? Because I can keep going. Brick by brick, body by body. What do you see when you look at me?
Not Kevin
what do you
Spacey.
See when you look at me?
It's too late to start.
Dan Mofro. So Mr. Slagle, now that you've seen the trailer, which is great for radio,
yeah.
And of course we talked over the trailer, will you be dragging Fair Sweet Bianca to this one?
No, I don't think so.
No? Not her?
I don't know. I don't think it's hers, but not necessarily mine
it's
either.
Your...
I don't know. I feel like these are...
expendable?
Yeah.
Terrible. Okay. The less you think about this is one of those you kind of have to turn your brain off. This is action film comfort food. It's what you expect it to be up until it turns into it waits until at least maybe the last 15 minutes before it turns into big dumb action movie. For you, what you don't quite get in the trailer, he does work at a place with, as Ed Johnson points out, is not Home Depot.
Yeah,
it's Home Mart. It's Home Mart, not Home Depot. But he works there. He's an average, everyday citizen that happens to have a special set of skills, and he will find you.
Secrets.
And he will kill you. And he helps out a young prostitute played by Chloe Grace Moritz. Who's not in this film as much as you would expect from seeing the trailer. She shows up at the beginning and then kind of pops up at the end. There's a series of things where he equalizes things. You know what? Equalizing things happen.
Yeah, you would expect
the,
that.
The big one, of course, is getting in trouble with the Russian mob, and they bring in not Kevin Spacey. And by the way, not Kevin Spacey is Martin Sokas. good sport. He's kind of a Euro that guy. I'm sure if you looked him up, you've seen him in a bunch of things.
Oh, Euro that guy.
You're not that guy. So it's not really groundbreaking. There is a fight scene at the end inside the Home Not Depot, where, of course, Denzel uses a lot of the items that are first purchase for his advantage. But when it gets to the moment of Denzel walking in slow motion in the rain with the ominous trailer music playing, the 10 a.m. crowd really got into it, and it is a little eye-rolling. I still like watching Denzel work. I really wish he would do something else other than a comedy, even though I enjoyed this. And this is where I'm getting to about with Liam Neeson. I know Denzel does plays on occasion. I think he just did Raisin in the Sun again, and I know he did Julius Caesar on Broadway a couple of years back. So I'm guessing he's, you know, financially he should be fine. He gets the big checks for this movie, and he's the main reason to watch it. He is still charming, and he delivers. He's supposed to be charming and brutal. I guess it's the women want to be with him, and dudes want to do things like he does. That's still here. That's not a problem. But I wonder how many more of these before it starts to get old. I know he got an Oscar nomination for Flight, which he was great in it. The film's flawed. But it's been over almost 20 years since he's done a comedy. Last one he did was The Preacher's Wife with Whitney Houston. So he hasn't done a comedy since Whitney's died.
See, I didn't know that he
did comedy.
Yeah. Didn't know.
Exactly.
The only thing I know Denzel is this type
right.
stuff.
He also did much. He was also in Much Ado About Nothing, which you should watch sometime. Since you guys missed my performance,
yeah.
But no, he's funny. I think he's a very talented actor. He can do anything he wants. He's just kind of, I don't know if it's by his choice or these are the scripts that he's being thrown at, but. I would like to see something else from him. I'm still mending the film, but I'm hoping that there will be a change somewhere down the road. And the same thing I was saying about Liam Neeson. A Walk Among the Tombstones is not Taken 3. There is a scene with him on the phone.
Taken again.
Still Taken. but no, and the thing is, with the Liam Neeson films, I haven't seen all of them. Like, I haven't seen Nonstop, and I think I missed, the one with January Jones. Anyway, he's getting big money for those, and good for him. You know, I think he's also working on a film with Scorsese right now. So I'm like, okay, this is the big art project that we've been hoping for.
It's also an art film.
It's not an art film. I want him to do an art film now that he's got like mad money, the two of them. But I don't know. How about Denzel and Liam doing Shakespeare in a film? That would be cool.
All right,
I would like that. Anyway. It is exactly what it is. It's comfort food. It's not groundbreaking. It's worth checking out. The other film opening today that I really liked, and I actually liked it better than this one, is the film called Love is Strange, which stars John Lithgow and Alfred Molina. They're a longtime couple who finally get married in New York, and as soon as they get married, Alfred Molina loses his job as a choir teacher. Choir director at a Catholic high school, and they lose their. They have to sell their apartment and live separately until they get their lives back together. Marissa Tomei is in this film as well, and what's fun about the film is the couple itself. There's not enough of Molina and Lithgow together because of the plot, but they are really, really good. They look like a couple that have been together for almost four decades. And it's not a film where it's not the third wheel sitcom shenanigans of, you know, an older person moving into this house. Lithgow's character moves in to his nephew's house, and his niece-in-law is Marissa Tomei. And Molina's character moves in with a couple of police officers, and they just realize that it's not quite the living situations they want. Lithgow's character helps out a young boy, his nephew's son, who's having some trouble, but it's not sitcom material. It's above that, and Lithgow and Molina are really good in it. So you should go check that out. And it's also an art film.
It's also an art film.
We got one more because I didn't see this one, but I really want to. It's the Skeleton Twins, the apparently the dramatic turn for Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig, where they play brother and sister. And,
oh, yes, yes, yes.
And they're
yes,
contemplating
yes.
They're contemplating their life's futures because apparently they both attempted suicide at the same time. So, yes, we have two more actors from Saturday Night Live alum who are going to take a dramatic turn, or at least in one film. So that's opening as well. Also opening today is the new animated film The Box Trolls from the creators of Coraline and Paranorman. So there is plenty out there to check out. Mr. Slagle, what's happening at your alma mater?
IU Cinema tonight, 6:30 p.m., we have The Great Flood. Last year, a documentary. And then at 9:30, we have, from 1984, Stop Making Sense.
The Talking Heads musical documentary, directed by Jonathan Demme.
There you go.
Good stuff.
Tomorrow, Saturday, 3 o'clock, from 1930, Morocco. Do you know it?
Oh, Clark Gable.
Looks like.
I think so.
And, oh, from 1966, Andre Rublev.
Okay. I haven't
epic
seen it.
Foreign language drama.
Epic things happen.
That's what it says here.
It does not say it epic
says,
things.
It says epic foreign language drama.
Okay, you made it sound like epic things happen.
No,
it's got a one-sentence capsule.
Epic thing. It's epic, bro.
It's IU cinema, not film sociology. What's this movie about? Epic things.
Epic stuff, man. And then Sunday, September 28th at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Miss Nikki and the Tiger Girls from 2012.
All right.
And followed by Ida from 2013.
Actually, that's
Ida.
Ida. Sorry. That's also out on DVD and Blu-ray this week. Pretty good.
There you go.
September 28th at various theaters at AMC, they are showing from 1939 Gone with the Wind. They're showing it twice because that's all you can do.
Oh, my goodness.
One at 2 p.m. and the other at 7 p.m. Now, We won't talk about the prices because we can't, technically. We're NPR. But it's epic. And I know NPR just did a story this week, I think it was on All Things Considered, about Gone with the Wind. It is the 75th anniversary. That's why they're doing it. Now, full disclosure, Mr. Slagle, your lovely wife, Fair Sweet Bianca, loves this film.
Absolutely loves this film.
How many times has she watched it from start to finish?
I don't know.
How many times have you watched it from start to finish?
I have not, because I can't stand it. I cannot stand. Oh my god!
Is this the one?
It's like 2 hours to get to the intermission. Just the intermission.
How many times has she attempted for you to watch? Honey, come down and watch this.
I don't know, but it's. It's okay.
This should be good.
Bianca's interesting in that let's say you're doing something at home.
Yes.
Maybe a chore, a bunch of chores on the weekend or whatever.
Right.
Let's say you put some music on to listen to while you do this, whether it's dishes, whether it's laundry, you're hanging out in the house, you're doing something, cleaning, whatever it is.
Yes.
Do you put music on to listen
to? I will tell you, I especially do it when I cook.
There you go.
There's a disc player right by the kitchen, so I will blast some Al Green
great.
Or some Rush
that's
while
great.
I'm cooking.
That's fair.
Does
okay.
she?
Wait a minute.
Uh-oh. I think I know where this is going.
Will you, while you're listening, yes. will you let the CD repeat?
No.
I will.
You will.
I'll let it repeat.
No, I have, hosting.
Actually, depending on what it is, I'll
hosting
change it up.
Hosting the music show that I do on Saturdays, I always have the box of cool. Mm-hmm. So there's something I need to be listening to for some reason. We might be burying the lead.
Are you going
to
put the clues together here, Matt? It all together.
Does Fair Sweet Bianca clean the house to Gone with the Wind?
She watches movies on loop. Gone with the Wind is one of those
You're
movies.
You're kidding.
I am not.
I did not. Wow. On a loop.
Yep.
Oh, we got to get her in. We got to bring
We've
her in.
We've been moving into our house.
Yes,
we
you have.
We have a record player.
You
we
have
found
the
Gone with the Wind soundtrack on record.
You have
I don't know how many times this last week I've heard the Gone with the Wind soundtrack just rolling
you
over
You are
and
living
over
in mini
over.
Terra. You are living in mini terror. She's going to make you put on a pencil-thin mustache and carry her up the stairs. And make Frank dress up like like Hattie McDaniel or Leslie Howard. I don't know. Oh my gosh. All right, that's yeah. new on DVD and Blu-ray this week, the Seth Rogen, Zac Efron comedy Neighbors, where people who are no longer hip anymore live next door to a frat house. There are moments that I laughed out loud. It's also wildly uneven as far as pacing and tone. Sometimes it's a bromance of an older gentleman. Even though Seth Rogen's not old, he's between our age, I think. But it's that trying to relive your early days growing up. And then just, neighbors battling each other. Just really uneven. However, there is a post-apocalyptic film we're checking out called The Rover. And it stars...
Oh, wait.
This is Guy Pearce and Robert Pattinson. And it's from the director of Animal Kingdom.
Yes,
and it's
yes.
really good. And I guess I'm berating my daughter for all this dystopian nonsense that she's really into. I guess in my future, it has to be bleak and shot in southern Australia. No organized government, just every man for himself. And in this case, Guy Pearce takes Robert Pattinson hostage because Pattinson's brother did something bad to Pierce's character, stole his car. And it doesn't become hostage and captive, it doesn't quite become allies, but somewhere in between. And Robert Pattinson's actually pretty good in this. He has more to do in this one, I think, than being pale and moody in that trilogy.
You drink your haterade.
I do drink my
haterade. Being a hater.
Yeah, I know she doesn't want to hear that, but... But as I posted on Twitter, I watched the film The Rover, also known as, oh my goodness, Robert Pattinson's good in this. Also out on Blu-ray this week, the complete collections of Halloween, Saw, and The Exorcist. I'll take The Exorcist, Halloween if it's given to me as a gift, don't need Saw. And Criterion has released... William Shakespeare's Macbeth, directed by Roman Polanski. Because that's the film you want to make after your pregnant wife has been slaughtered by the Manson family. Well, on that note, we're going to...
Sharp turn.
Ladies and gentlemen, she won season 6 of The Next Food Network Star, and she's been on Food Network and Cooking Channel. She has her own blog. She has, it's not just a title, it's a way of life. Her new cookbook is called Ati Pati. Here is my chat with Arti Sequeira. Joining me on Film Sociology is a cook, TV personality, now published author, and if she were any more bubbly, we'd have to add orange juice to her and make her a mimosa. Hi, Arti.
That's the best intro I've ever gotten.
Well, this is your pledge dollars at work.
That's awesome. And I am a public radio supporter, so it's good to hear.
Yes, this is, folks, how we connected. So social media is used for good, not for stalking evil, so everything's fine. And as somebody who has his name incorporated into his show, like Film Sociology, Arti Party, that's one of the best.
Thank you. It actually came about because I'm Indian, and actually, that's a gross mispronunciation of my name. But the Indian pronunciation is Arti, and I just thought that would be a little tricky for people to pronounce, and so... Arti Pati was a way for people to remember my name, and actually came about because my husband and I were talking about, if you could have one Ben and Jerry's ice cream flavor, what would you call it and what would be in it? And I was completely stumped, and he came up with Arti Pati, and then it just kind of stuck.
Well, it's funny because we have to say it with the accent, because if you say Arti Party like an American, it doesn't have the same zing.
As Arti Pati?
Yes.
Sounds a little better, yeah.
So
with a name like Arti, I mean, when I was growing up, it was easy to rhyme with. So I got Arti Party, Smarty, Crafty, and then my favorite, Party.
there's our quota for that word this month.
yeah, exactly.
Well, that's okay because that helps balance out tacos, nachos, and tomatoes, which still makes my daughter giggle when we watch you on TV. Because then we say, let's call the whole thing off. So I wasn't sure how long ago you had Arti Pati, because when we first saw it on the very first episode of Food Network Star, because it's not just a catchy name. Now it's a show, and now it's a cookbook.
Yes, now it's a cookbook, brand new, brand spanking new. I'm actually holding it in my hands right now. And as number one Indian cookbook on Amazon and the number four Asian cookbook after the Momofuku cookbook. So I'm super pleased. Aarti Paarti started as kind of a desperate plea to the Lord to help me figure out what the heck I was supposed to be doing with my life, because up till then I'd been a journalist, I'd worked at CNN, and then all of a sudden I realized that it wasn't necessarily what I wanted to be doing with my life. So, you know, long story short, I started blogging and coming up with recipes, and then I started this YouTube cooking show, the cooking variety show called Aarti Paarti. And it's still on YouTube. You can go Google it and find it. And I got so much joy after doing that. And it was the first time that I felt like I was doing something that I was tailor-made to do. And shortly after that, you know, someone hired me to do a couple of videos. And I stood there in my kitchen going, I can't believe someone is paying me to do this thing. And that was such an incredible privilege. I thought that was it. And then I ended up winning Food Network Star, and here I am with a cookbook in my hand.
Same here. My copy, not yours. But I have to tell you, when we watched season six in my house, this is the only time this has happened for our in our house for a Food Network Star. We picked you from the very first show. You know, sometimes sometimes your favorite goes off, or sometimes you change your mind. But you had you had the whole package, and so that hasn't happened since.
Oh, well, that's lovely to hear. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I thought that I was going to get kicked off the first episode because I was doing such a poor job. And, you know, as some background, like, I am not a trained chef, and here I was going up with people who had, you know, trained and worked at the finest restaurants in the country and in the world. You know, some of them were trained in Paris. And so I, you know, I just thought that, you know, this was a pure exercise in courage, and that's it. You know what I mean? I never thought that it would lead to now. And I never thought that, honestly, that the sort of the style of cooking that I do, which is an American kitchen with an Indian soul, I just didn't know whether there would be an appetite for that, because I know there are a lot of people who are put off by Indian food, both by, you know, how hard it is to make, or at least how hard they think it is to make, and, you know, if they've had bad experiences with it. And so it's kind of my mission in life to undo both of those myths.
Do you wear a sash when you do this?
I do, and I have an imaginary tiara.
No, you don't. You have a real tiara. Come on.
I did have a tiara, and then I lost it. And I was very upset about that.
We'll have to work on that. Well, one of the things I've loved about the show and the cookbook is, like you said, is sometimes Indian food can be considered intimidating. And in the cookbook, you have a variety of recipes that range from, I mean, diehard old school Indian recipes to something as simple as maybe an American meal with different spices on it.
Yeah, I mean, when I started cooking, it was primarily American food, actually. I mean, when I was very little, when I was, you know, 8, 9, 10, whatever, I was baking because I was a fat kid. And can I say that? I was a fat kid, and so my parents didn't stock any goodies at home, and so the enterprising child I was like, okay, well, I'll just make them. But when I started making actual food, nutritious food, it was sort of American-style food because when it came to what was on TV, what was in the newspapers, remember those newspapers, you know, cookbooks and stuff, it was all that kind of food, and I felt more comfortable following those instructions. So it took me a while to come around to trying Indian food, and so that's why you'll find things like, you know, lasagna cupcakes with mango chutney, because, you know, one of the first dishes I learned to make was lasagna, and while I loved it, I still missed some of those flavors that I had grown up with, so I would tinker with the recipes a little bit and throw a few spices here and there so that it tasted more like the food I grew up with.
Well, by the way, I did read, I went to Ball State, which is where Jim Davis went to school, so we will send Garfield your regards.
You really did read the cookbook!
I'll show you more. I did some homework, by the way. The article, the recipe for pretzel fried steak, I call that the centerfold, because it made me fall in love with you even more. Yeah, I held it upside sideways, and my daughter goes, "What are you doing?"
That one is a really good one. It's funny, actually, because, you know, these recipes have come about over the past 3 years, maybe longer. And so some of them, you know, my husband had forgotten about. So when he was flipping through the book, that was actually one of them. He was like, "Oh, my goodness, the pretzel fried steak, I forgot about that. Actually, you know what? I'm going to make that for dinner."
Really?
Done. Okay. Done and done. It's happening.
Okay, but you have to call out my name when you eat it.
I'm married, mister.
So am I. No, if you listen carefully, you can hear my wife laughing her head off. So it's all in the balance. The other thing that's a part of the book for folks should know is a guide to the pantry, as well as breaking out different versions of curries and chutneys.
Yes. So that is one of the biggest complaints that I hear from people. And these are people who are interested in cooking Indian food, is that there are just too many, you know, special ingredients that you have to get. I get it. What I tell people in the pantry section is there are a number of ingredients that you probably already have in your pantry. Just sort of go through, you know, shake the dust off the spice rack, and I bet you have paprika, I bet you have cumin, and I bet you have coriander. And these days, because it's becoming such a hip ingredient because of its healing properties, I bet a lot of people also have turmeric. And so at that point, you've got four, and all you need are three more, which I would say is garam masala, which is an Indian spice blend. Garam means warm. Masala means spice blend. And it's a great one because it's so versatile. It's got cinnamon, cloves, cardamom, black pepper. If you're going to buy one pre-made, I would suggest you would buy the spicehouse.com version. I get no money off of this. I just think it is the best pre-made garam masala on the market. It's wonderful, and they grind it fresh. So, yeah, and you can even get just a small amount as opposed to a big jar. So that's one of them. And then there's two more, black or brown mustard seeds. Again, get them from Spice House. And then the last one, and this is only if you really want it, is cardamom pods or cardamom seeds. I just think that if you get the garam masala, the black mustard seeds, and the cardamom, you're going to fall in love with these spices because they're intoxicating. Once they have a hold on you, you will be inspired and you will find all kinds of different ways to work them into your food. As evidenced in my book, I mean, you can find garam masala both in savory dishes and in my Huggy Buggy bread pudding, which has coconut, cashew, and garam masala, in my, you know, homemade magic shell recipe, which is, you know, chocolate, coconut oil, garam masala, and salt. It's a four-ingredient recipe, and it's awesome. So you can get that nice, you know, crisp chocolate shell on your ice cream. It's just, you know, once you start, you know, experimenting with these spices, they will inspire you. They won't scare you. And my hope is that through making a couple of the recipes in the book, you'll start to feel a little more empowered with your spice rack.
Absolutely. And I think Sweet and Spicy should be your first album title.
Yeah, well, I was a huge Spice Girl fan back in the day.
Now, I had a question because this is the film show. Did you actually have an Annie Hall moment dealing with lobsters in the kitchen?
So I had never cooked lobster before, and I was about to go on Chopped, and I thought, oh my goodness, what if they give me a lobster? I'm going to look like a fool if I don't know how to extinguish this thing. Mm-hmm. So I went and got a couple of lobsters. My husband is from Boston. He was like, don't worry, hon, we've got this all sorted. And we brought them home, put them in the bathtub, because that's what they did when they were little. While we waited for the water comes to a boil. And while that was happening, you know, I'm a blogger, so I started taking photos of these things, and I made the worst mistake. I made eye contact. So then when it came time to, you know, kill the little guy, I started crying. Oh, I started crying really hard, and I couldn't do it, which is so weird because I come from farming stock.
Right.
So I thought I would be totally fine with this. And my husband started taking photos of me crying. And in the book, my lobster recipe, which is, I call it the hypocrite's lobster roll.
Yes.
You can see the photo that he took of me weeping and staring at this lobster.
Well, your husband's a director in his own right, and I didn't know until recently that he had directed episodes of the show, which I thought that's going to be a nice family affair.
He directed every single episode except the first one, and the only reason he didn't do the first one is that I was being stubborn and wanted to shoot it by myself, mm-hmm. and then realized that I needed two hands to cook. But yeah, my husband, Brendan, is an actor and a director and a writer. He actually put out past couple of years have been very productive for us. We had a baby.
Congrats.
And I put out a cookbook, and then he put out an old school, new school comedy album, sort of like the old Bob Newhart comedy albums with mm-hmm. his comedy partner. It's called The Big Tickle. So if anybody's interested, I'd love you guys to check it out.
It's called The Big Tickle?
The Big Tickle, yeah.
Okay, be careful when you search that at work. So did you because he photographed you weeping, did you ever get him back?
Oh, you know, I think I've probably taken photos of him, you know, mid sleep and put them up on my blog before, so it was just as well. But you know, honestly, the one thing that has sort of marked my public life, I hate saying that, it sounds so ostentatious, but is that, you know, to my credit and probably to my demerit, I'm like painfully honest on my blog. I write about, you know, everything that I'm going through. I've written about going through postpartum depression after, you know, having my adorable, wonderful, loving daughter, and still struggling with it even today. I have talked about, you know, dealing with insecurities and fears and how even after winning Food Network Star, I still feel like, you know, someone is going to find out that I don't know what I'm doing and they're going to fire me. So I actually didn't mind that he took that photo because I was like, here we go. If I say I'm going to be honest, then this is real honesty here.
Don't worry, Artie. I've been with NPR for 15 years. We're doing fine. So the other thing I was curious about, you wrote about taking an improv class, and I was wondering, obviously improv can be a part of cooking. It's not just for the stage.
Yeah, well, you know, because my husband is an actor and we live in L.A., the majority of our friends are performers of one sort or another, you know, musicians, actors, clowns, aerialists, all that kind of stuff. And so when he started taking improv classes, I was the dutiful, you know, biggest fan and went to every single improv show. And I started to sort of absorb some of the lessons that improv teaches you. And somewhere along the way, someone said, well, when are you going to take an improv class? And I was like, well, what do I need to take it for? I'm not an actor. But, you know, there are so many good life lessons in improv. And so finally I did take it and I learned some really valuable ones, like, you know, I'm very indecisive as a person, and one of the big, you know, lessons in improv is make a decision and stick to it. It doesn't really matter what the decision is, just pick one and stick to it. And it's the sticking to it that kind of will make it a good decision, sort of, you know. The other one that is really helpful to me is, you know, if you think about all the world being a stage, focus out. So focus out. It means you don't focus on yourself and making yourself look good. You focus on the people around you who are on the stage with you, and you do everything in your power to support them and make all their decisions look really good and sort of build on their decisions. You know, the whole improv thing is yes and. Yes, I think that what you're doing is a good idea, and here's something I can do to add to it to make it even better. Those two things really helped me as a person, and they helped me in the kitchen because until I started taking improv, I had never made up a recipe before. I had been too scared. I followed every recipe to the T, and that's wonderful because it taught me so much about cooking, but at a certain point, I needed to be kicked out of the nest, and improv really helped me feel like I could do that.
Can you give an example of what you did improv cooking-wise soon after?
Well, yes, I can. The very first recipe that I came up with is called I Ate Chicken Chicken. The name probably explains itself now that you know the background and the recipe is in the book. It's a roast chicken with a butter that has cardamom and lemon zest and a little bit of turmeric. It's a very fragrant, very easy chicken, and it always turns out well, primarily because there's a ton of butter in it. But it's a great crowd pleaser, and it's also a great recipe if you're just trying to wrap your mind around some of these quote-unquote exotic flavors in Indian cooking. It's also a really big hit with kids.
Speaking of kids, are meatballs still the cutest thing on the planet?
Apart from my child, yes.
Okay, so it's your daughter, meatballs, and then bunnies.
Then baby unicorns.
Then baby unicorns. And yet we have pictures of you with bunny ears. That's fun.
Yeah, that was Halloween. That was actually someone, you know, from our improv class was holding a Halloween party. And so my husband and I went as bunny assassins, which is why my Twitter pictures of me with these bunny ears with a little toy gun in my hand and then a little frying pan, a little cast iron skillet in the other hand.
Okay, I thought he was going to go as Hugh Hefner. That's a different bunny, different story.
No, I'm not into those bunnies at all.
Speaking of meatballs, you have a recipe in your cookbook. Could you explain it a little bit more?
Yeah, so meatball curry is actually a pretty authentic recipe that came out of the Anglo-Indian community. There's a lot of Indian cooking that was influenced by the British being there, and I have a couple of recipes in my book because I come from a Christian Roman Catholic community, and you know, we're kind of linked with the Anglo-Indian community. Anyway, so this meatball curry is cooked in a tomato coconut sauce. This is another great one for kids because kids love meatballs. And it's really, really simple. It's also a great party dish. One of the proudest things for me about this recipe is that you use coconut milk in the curry, but then you have the rest of that can of coconut milk left, which is so infuriating, I know, for so many people. So then you take that coconut milk and you cook the rice in it, and you get this delicious, moist, fluffy coconut rice that goes so well with the meatball curry, and you haven't wasted anything.
That's good, because normally I would just put rum in it and put it in a blender, but that's even a good idea, too.
That's why you buy 2 cans of coconut milk.
Why stop at 2? Jeez. because this is a film show, I have to ask, you in your pretzel fried steak recipe, you talked about watching Cary Grant films at Christmas. What were some of the films you watched on Christmas?
You know, my favorite Cary Grant movie is it My Girl Friday or His Girl Friday?
His Girl Friday.
That is my favorite. I mean, obviously it has sort of, you know, the intrepid journalism thing going on in it. So that is my favorite. I just, you know, there's just something so special about watching these old black and white movies around the holidays. I'm so excited that we're kind of heading into that time again. And, you know, we watched a lot of movies, we always watched everything that came out in the movie theater, and now we watch anything that we can rent. Because, you know, we're not getting out that much with a baby. But
yep.
Movies and food are two of our biggest pastimes and often happen at the same time.
Give us an example of what would be a special movie as well as a special recipe that you would create on movie night at home.
Oh, that is a good, good question.
Journalism degree at Ball State.
I can see it working. let's see. I think that I'm really into food that comforts you, perhaps because, I don't know, I'm so far away from home, and so, you know, food that comforts me is sort of my favorite food. So I think that what we might do is watch something like, I'm torn. The Aristocats is one of my favorite movies, and so is The Fox and the Hound. The Fox and the Hound has sort of special meaning to my husband and I because we watched it in college when we were dating. And so we might watch The Fox and the Hound, and then I might make for him my hot dog a la rose, which is this really goofy, kooky recipe that came about because my mom, whose name is Rose, was trying to find a way to bridge the gap between the Indian food that she knew and loved and sort of the more westernized food that I was being exposed to because I was going to a British school in Dubai. And so I would have friends over after school to play and, you know, slumber parties and stuff. And so she would make this dish, which is hot dogs sliced into rounds, stay with me, and then cooked in this tomato, ginger, and garlic sauce.
Okay.
It sounds really bizarre, but it's so addictive. And for us, because, you know, we spent a number of years living on an unemployment check for me and my husband, it was a dish we made a lot because it was cheap. So it has special meaning for us. So I think Fox and the Hound and Hot Dogs a la Rose would be our special movie night.
That's a good throwback night.
Yeah, TBT.
So because you have a baby, what was the last film you saw in a theater?
Oh, my gosh. You know what? When Alaya, that's her name, Alaya was born, we actually went to a lot of Mummy and Me movies for the first month or two. They were awesome. Whoever came up with that idea, I just want to kiss them. Because it's such a great way to get out of the house, but feel like it's very low impact and low stress. So I think the last one we saw, the last one I remember, was the Lego movie.
Okay.
But we were so paranoid because we had read that you shouldn't have your babies watch any screens until they're two. And so this poor thing kept turning around to watch this huge screen, and we were like, no, look over here. but I loved that movie, and it was a nice one for it to be the last one in the theater.
The mommy movies are a great idea because it does get you out of the house. I know some that, depending on your situation, I won't ask, but I mean, those that are able to nurse in public and then also, when at night, when you see a baby in a theater, you kind of wince and squirm and you hope for the best, but at least with a 10 a.m. on a Monday, there's none of that pressure whatsoever.
Yeah, it's great. And you get to meet other moms, too. Not that I did, because I'm actually a little bit shy. But yeah, it's such a great idea. And, you know, and it's sort of 2 hours of peace where you can just sort of sit and not care about, you know, what your house looks like, the emails that are piling up, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's just 2 hours to sit and chill out.
And I think... and I have no scientific proof, I just know this as a parent, but I watched, you could watch anything in front of the kid for the first year. You know, my daughter's 12 and she hasn't said anything about me watching The Wild Bunch when she was 6 months old, so I think I dodged a bullet.
Well, I will, you know, it's funny because my husband is such a film buff and such a lover of film because his father is such a lover of film and wanted to be a film director. He's an artist of many types. And so when Bren was really young, he went to the movies with him and so, you know, saw all the Kurosawa films with him. And then, you know, the two of them went off and made samurai movies just themselves, like father-son samurai movies. And, you know, my husband was like 4 or 5, toe-headed little kid talking about killing, you know, avenging his father's death and stuff. So he turned out 5, so I guess it's okay for Alaya.
Exactly. What was the first film you and Brendan saw as a couple?
I think the first one we saw, at least the one that I remember, is what's it called? It's the Rodriguez film with Antonio Banderas.
Desperado.
Desperado. That was the first movie, and I was mortified. I was like, Bren, this movie is so violent. Like, what is the deal? And, you know, Bren then started to, you know, explain the balletic movements of Antonio Banderas with his guns. And
not to mention the scene with he and Salma Hayek.
Well, yes, that didn't, you know, hurt. But, yeah, for So I still watch that movie. That's actually another one that we would probably bond over. But that's the first one I remember. But we saw so many movies together, and I sort of understand so much more about what makes a good film and what makes for good acting. And, you know, I think I watched movies pretty mindlessly before I met Brett, and he really helped me sort of cultivate this love for film and almost, you know, also a little bit of snobbery about film, but, you know, especially comedy, because Brent has such a great sense of humor and is such a great comedic actor. And so, I really credit him and thank him, really, for giving me this appetite for good film.
How long have you guys been married?
We just celebrated our 11th wedding anniversary.
Congrats.
And we've been together for 18 years total.
Excellent. My wife and I, we next month will be 15 for us. And what we've learned is that we have both our own interests, you know, whether it's art, music, what have you, film. And then there's just enough of a center that I call it the MasterCard logo, but there's just enough mutual interest in between to make us a couple. Is that the same with you guys?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, because, well, when we got together, we were both 18, and Bren was really sort of the first serious boyfriend I'd ever had. And so I sort of, you know, turned his interests into mine, which I think is something that happens when you're very young and you're just so besotted by a person and think they're the coolest person ever. But then over the years, the cool thing is that sort of naturally we've taken on each other's interests. So, you know, he's taken an interest in, I remember I was a radio DJ in college, and my show was called Continental Drift, and it was a world music show. And so way, way back then, you know, I was playing all this world music, and now when I look at my husband's playlist, because every season he makes a playlist and puts it on SoundCloud, I'm seeing more and more world music crop up there. So I love seeing these sort of subtle influences I've had on him over 18 years of knowing each other.
Were you a DJ at Northwestern?
Yes, I was a DJ, and I was a news, you know, radio news producer and reporter and anchor. But yeah, at WNUR.
Yeah, my first radio job before I moved here, I was with WDCB in Glen Ellen.
Oh, hilarious.
College of DuPage, yeah. I worked.
Oh, college radio. I miss it.
Yep, I was there. Actually, I moved to Indy in 99. I was managing a coffee shop in Wheaton, and then I was a newspaper editor in Westmont, and I got a small stint with College of DuPage before I moved here. So we were in the same zip code, at least, for a while.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The thing about college radio is, I think it was more fun to do than probably to listen to.
Yes. You're. I've heard some of my old shows. You are absolutely right.
Yeah. But it's cool. I mean, it really got me going in terms of, I mean, it gave me a deep love for radio. I, you know, interned at some AM news stations. I interned at WBEZ in Chicago. And, you know, I still love radio because I just think it's such a facile medium. You know, mm-hmm. You can tell such wonderful stories on there and keep people's interest. And, you know, now I think that's translating into podcasts. You know, podcasts kept me going when I was writing my cookbook because I couldn't watch anything because it would distract me, but I can't cook in silence. So I listened to just so many podcasts, and I actually listed them in the back of my book.
Nice.
Saying thank you for keeping me sane.
Going back to movies a little bit, is there cooking moments in cinema that are particular favorites of yours?
Oh, wow. What a good question. You know, the cool thing is I feel like there are a lot of great cooking or food-based films now, a lot more than maybe when I was growing up. I mean, the first one that comes to mind is in Big Night when, you know, they unveil the, what's the name of that dish?
The timpani.
Yes, the timpani.
Yes.
When they unveiled the timpani. Oh, my gosh. That is just one of the best moments in film.
There was a big gasp. There was a big gasp in our audience when that was opened.
Yeah. It's so good. I love that. And then another one I was thinking about was, You know, there are moments in, I don't know if you watch Chef.
The Jon Favreau film.
Yeah, the Jon Favreau film. When he is making the grilled cheese, there's a real sort of intensity to it. And then if you had stayed and waited for the post-credit scene, you see my friend Roy Choi teaching Jon Favreau how to make grilled cheese. And I suddenly understood why he was making it so intensely, because Roy Choi, who is, you know, the Kogi truck fame, he's got a new show on CNN coming out, is a very intense person. And so it makes so much sense to me that he would only make a grilled cheese really, really, really dramatically. So that's another favorite scene for me.
That's a lot of fun. Okay, I have to ask, what is your favorite Bollywood musical?
Oh, gosh. I still think that Chole, the old Bollywood film that is sort of a classic, is one of my favorites. There's a dance scene where Hemamalini is dancing on glass in order to save her lover. And it's, you know, just typically overly dramatic in Indian style. And I still think that that's one of my favorites. There's another film, actually, for any sort of movie files out there, Bollywood ones, called 1942, A Love Story. And it came out around, when I was maybe 17 or 18, around 96. And that's just a really sweet movie set around the time that India was partitioning. And the music's really beautiful, and it's sort of like an old-school romantic Bollywood film done in a new school way. I really like that movie, too.
I'm more of a Lagan person myself.
I like Lagan. Yeah. I like this. If we're thinking periods, too, there's another one that I really like with Aishwarya Rai, you know, former model, and mm-hmm. Hrithik Roshan, also former model, I believe. Called Jodha and Akbar, or Akbar Jodha, Jodha Akbar, I think, Jodha Akbar. And it's set in the Mughal times, and it's about the Mughal emperor, Akbar, who is a Muslim, and how he's trying to unify the Hindus by marrying a Hindu princess named Jodha. And it's about their love story, and it's beautiful. Her outfits are unbelievable, and the dancing's beautiful. And there's a great food scene in there, too, actually.
What do they make?
Well, she, there's a good deal of mistrust for her because she's a Hindu in a Muslim palace. And so she, you know, I guess there's one traditional thing that they do where the queen makes a meal or orders a feast for the king. But rather than have anyone else make the food, she makes every dish herself for him, and it's this incredibly lavish feast. And I think there's a scene where she pulls a piece of roti, a little piece of bread, and dips it in the curry and eats it herself first to prove that it's not poisonous,
mm-hmm.
and then takes another bite, you know, and then feeds her husband, which is, you know, a very intimate thing because, of course, we eat with our hands. And it's in front of the whole court. So it's a very powerful little move that she does and very, very canny. You know, she has more political know-how than they give her credit for.
Well, this reminds me, I have to use music. I have music from the 1970s film Don. I might have to use that in your honor this week.
Okay, I'm down. Hey, I'm down.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
We'll have to add to What Makes Kobe Ill, Best Intro Ever, said Artie. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Thanks to Artie Sequeira for hanging out. And thanks for Kobe for compiling this. And Bianca, got to get you back on the show. Go see a good movie, even if it's on loop. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
We gone. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.